Let's just pray together. God, thanks so much for your presence and just for the privilege and the honor that we have of abiding in you, of being together in your presence. Thank you for the reality of your presence with us, and that you're an incredible God, a good and faithful God. God, we pray that you would be with us in our time right now as we search our hearts and continue to lean into you and into the things that you would have for us. God, we give you our attention right now. Ask that you would, even where you need to tonight, soften our hearts to be able to receive from you. By your Spirit, would you speak to us? Even surprise us tonight. I pray that by your Spirit you would do things in us that would be surprising. When God moves in power, when he manifests his presence, when there are signs and wonders, I think even the heart that's just even the littlest bit soft is excited, surprised. There's something of God displaying his presence and his power in our lives that's meant to get our attention. And we pray that tonight, even as we look at some things and pray together and just continue to remain in this space of worship, that you would surprise us, that you would manifest your presence in our lives in really profound ways. Especially tonight, I just ask for eyes to see and ears to hear what the Spirit is doing and saying in relationship to our story. In Jesus' name. Amen. Just really quick, because this we have done a lot of since we reloaded today. That's okay. But we've been talking quite a bit about Psalm 126. And this idea that if our lives, in the present are to look like joy-filled lives, like life to the full, that both our past and our future kind of have impact here. A little bit. And so the psalmist in Psalm 126 begins kind of looking back into his past and remembering what did I do wrong there?
That says remember.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's like, that is so normal.
Remember.
I'm really tired today.
That's how Manny says it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That there's a couple of spiritual disciplines that are really important for our lives. Dissipation, oh boy, this is gonna be, shouldn't be writing on anything today. A couple of disciplines that are really important for our lives, and the psalmist shows them in Psalm 126 when he begins by remembering all these incredible things that God had done in the lives of the people of Israel and in his own life. And we talked about the fact that when we remember as Christians the things that God's done, it's not just kind of a nostalgic exercise looking back, but it actually is incredibly powerful in our lives, because Christian remembrance actually brings the past into our present. Because we are remembering a God who's the same today as he was yesterday. So there's sort of this kind of powerful thing that happens in our lives, and when we look back at the places where we've seen God move and the things that he's spoken to us and the promises that he's given and the promises that he's fulfilled and all these kinds of things and how important that is. And then we talked a couple of weeks ago about that's kind of pulling the past into the present, the fact that also at the same time as Christians we have a future hope that's informed by that, and we begin to anticipate or to look forward to what God's going to do with real hope and excitement in our hearts, and that this, from our present, we begin to look into the future with this kind of clear prayer, and with what might even seem foolishness to some, might seem audacious to some, But we begin to pray with some real confidence and some hope. Prayers like, do it again. We saw what you've done in the past, would you do it again? And as we've talked about that, we've kind of been honest with ourselves. And I pray that God would continue to kind of touch our hearts in like really real places where those things are actually hard for us to do. Where either one of those spiritual disciplines actually are challenging for us. I think for some of us to look back, actually in a way, and to see God in our stories as we look back isn't just easy. There's actually probably parts of that story where we would rightly say, God, where were you? In the midst of that part. It's not all just, you know, happy kind of good stuff, but there's the other stuff too, and as we look back. And that's a really fruitful exercise, even in those spaces, to be prayerfully saying, Jesus, where were you? And to have him show how he's been there and been faithful in these different places. But then as well as we look forward, it can be, and this is kind of what we've been bumping into in our own hearts, is that to look forward and to pray with some anticipation or some hope to kind of lay our desires on the line looking forward is something that's actually been kind of hard for many of us. We've realized, oh, there's something wrong there. Like to be able to pray this Psalm 126, to really live into that is actually difficult for me. To begin to pray, Lord, would you do it again? I actually don't want to maybe set myself up for disappointment, where I don't, there's many things that have been stirring in our hearts there and we're trying to pay attention to. Because I've said this over the past couple of weeks, but I believe that part of the reason why this is coming up for us is because God's up to something. God actually wants to bring us into a fullness of life in the present, in our today. And part of that, he knows, is to free us to these places of desire. I think key to it right now is that. And so I want to talk a little bit tonight about, we've spent one night kind of looking back and talking about remembering the past, and we spent one night kind of talking about looking forward, and really fun on that night. We ended up all kinds of crazy, cool, prophetic stuff happening, and people's lives being just spoken into, and things awakening. You know, it was really beautiful. I want to spend some time tonight just looking at today. Looking at where we're at right now, and the space that we're sitting in right now. And I want to look together at Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 1. Fairly familiar story, but I want to read it together, and I'm going to point a couple things out as we go. I want to look at Samuel chapter 1, 1 Samuel chapter 1, and it's the story of Samuel's birth, but really the center kind of character in the story is Samuel's mom, Hannah. And as I kind of read through this story, just kind of keep in mind a couple of things. Like, think about this. I'm kind of struck as I read this, just by how present Hannah is in her life, how present she is in her situation. And so I want to look at that a little bit, because that's what we're going to talk about today, is just being really present today, being really present with God right here, like literally here in this room, but like even just right here in the sense of like where you are right now in your life, being really present with him in the struggles of it, in the joys of it, in all those kinds of things. Because Sarah and I were talking about a lot about this before dinner, but just as the people of God, as Christians, the thing that really sort of establishes us as that is the presence of God, right? That we are the people of God, that we are disciples of Jesus. So we even talked about that on Sunday, that everything we are flows out of that bonding with Christ. That really is what makes us disciples of Christ, is Christ. And it seems so simple, and yet so easily forgotten. And the lyrics of that hymn we sung, that Melinda led us in, are really beautiful for me in that space. It's just a good reminder to me, prone to wander. Lord, I feel sort of this sense in which, you know, he's always so present. And I think that's one of the takeaways for today, as you'll see as we kind of go through, but is God is always so present. But often we're not. And so I think it's important for us to be present. So to pay attention as we kind of read through this story to just Hannah and her presence in the story and what that looks like. And then we'll talk a bit about that. There was a certain man of Ramathim Zophim, I don't know, of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jerem. Okay, and there are a whole bunch of names. Son of Eliuhu, son of Tohu. You know, he's got a bunch of granddads. Yeah, he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah. The name of the other,
Penina.
Yeah, anyway. And we're not going to, we won't spend a bunch of time on the fact that he had two wives. That'll be another via equip. We can get into that. But anyway.
That's a Sunday school lesson.
Yeah. The kids can tell us how that works, yeah. Penina had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. And on the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Penina his wife and to all her sons and daughters, but to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. It says something pretty substantial about this guy, that this is the case, because in their culture, that I think it kind of points to the fact it's going to make sense of Hannah's life in a minute here, that this is a very interesting response in the space of her womb being closed. But her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So quite a juxtaposition there between her husband and her sister wife. So it went on year by year. And as often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. And therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. And now Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. And she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard, and therefore Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I've been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Then Eli answered, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him. And she said, let your servant find favor in your eyes. And then the woman went away and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Interesting. They rose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord, and then they went back to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel, for she said, I have asked for the Lord, I have asked for him from the Lord. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow, but Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, as soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she had weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh, and the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull and they brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who was standing here in your presence praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord made him. Therefore I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is lent to the Lord. And he worships the Lord there. Quite a story. There's a lot going on here. I think the writer of Samuel could have probably taken a few more chapters to tell this story. There's just a lot kind of condensed into here going on, but it strikes me as I read the story that there's something very unique about Hannah in the midst of a very difficult journey. A couple of things. But one of the things that hits me is how present she is in her story. And so just to kind of look at that a little bit, Hannah is not, she doesn't seem to be, have the same problem I often have. She doesn't seem stuck in her past or totally just fixated on or overwhelmed by the future. She seems very present in the moment. As you look at the story or you hear me read it, why do you think I would say that? Like, what are some of the things that kind of would speak to that being the case?
In her anxiety and despair, she was pouring out before the Lord.
Totally. Yeah. And able to articulate that that's what's happening. Mm. Like, she's able to say to Eli, no, that's not what's happening here in the present. This is what's happening. And it's, she's connecting it with very real heart language, right? Mm-hmm. Vexation, anxiety. Like, this is how I feel. And I think there's something important there.
Yeah.
Hannah's very connected with her emotions. Mm-hmm. It strikes me, actually.
I think verse 18, too, after Eli blesses her, that she can go away and eat, and she's not sad anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that moment passes and she moves. She's able to move
to the present.
Because something has happened there, right? For her, you get the sense that Eli has pronounced this blessing over her and granted her petition in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
But she feels like it's not just some crazy old priest has said something. God just must have done something. Because her whole countenance changes.
Yeah.
But it is incredible to me how present she is and able to make that transition. Because how often for us do we get kind of stuck? Especially when seasons have been really hard.
Mm-hmm.
One minute she's in anxiety and vexation, and the next minute she's able to enter into what God's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think that hit me too, for sure.
I think too, her prayer, like if she's praying for a son, she says, I'll give him to the Lord, and then actually follows through on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's something about where she's not going, I'll say this now, and if I get this gift, then I'll actually hoard him for myself. But there's something, even there's a piece about her future, like when that time comes, this is what I'll do.
Mm. Yeah.
Even just how she knew the timing of that too. You know, like, no, I'm not going now, I have to wait.
Mm.
She just knew when it needed to happen. And she needed to give him to Eli.
Which is a really interesting piece of the story. And I think worth paying attention to. How, like, that's an interesting dynamic. She seems to have this sense of how this is supposed to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
How? How does she, where does that come from for her?
Yeah. Is there something about this kind of dedication of a son that would have been the standard practice?
Yeah, I don't.
No.
It does seem to be, though, just from the text itself, that she's making a choice here because her husband says, you do. Like, it's interesting that he sort of defaults to her and says, you do what you think is best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, do what seems best to you.
Yeah.
Right, so there's a sense in which she's actually making a choice here.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and it is very crazy. But how do you? It seems like a bit of a Sunday school answer, but it's actually worth noting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how does she know this? How does she have? Where is the sense coming from? The sense of timing, even in the moment when, like I said, Eli declares this over her, she seems to know in a way that just doesn't happen because someone told you something. Mm-hmm. You know, like if somebody says to me, "This has been really hard. I am vexed. I am anxiety. I'm ridden." And then somebody says to me, "Oh, sorry, you know, like go in peace, you'll totally get." Yeah, remember I went to Jan and I can't have children. And I was into a doctor, because we can't have children because some medical stuff for me. Mm-hmm. So I was into the doctor, I don't know, just shortly after we moved here, and it was a walk-in clinic because we didn't have a doctor here yet. And I got this just sweetest little Indian lady. But like she was, like I kept thinking, Jesus, what's happening here? Like she was so old that it felt like you'd come into like the presence of like an oracle or something. She was just like, it was so crazy. And her hands were super arthritic. She had to do everything with one finger. And I thought, you're a doctor in the walk-in clinic at Walmart in Richmond. Like it was just this weird experience. I thought, Jesus, what's happening? So I was kind of paying special attention because it just seemed so outside of the box. But she was very obviously of the Hindu faith, and there's inside of that a really strong kind of thing around karma, right? Like you kind of get what you pay for thing in life. That's I'm simplifying obviously, but and so she was so vexed by the fact that we couldn't have children.
Wow.
It really bothered her. Mm. And she at one point she just took my hands. She comes right up over and she grabs my hands and she goes, "You will have children. You're a good person." And I just about started crying. It was just she's just being so sweet. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, there was this interesting piece for me. I almost said to her, "I actually believe I'll have children too, but not because I'm a good person."
Yeah.
It's actually, it's different, the promise for me, but, you know, but for her, it was connected to this thing. So I think in some ways, like, there is this response in people's hearts when they connect with sincere people who are really to want to say to them, you know, something along those lines. Well, you're a good person. You're going to get what you want, right?
Yeah.
And so to have this kind of interaction with Eli for Hannah is interesting to me that she walks away so different. I don't think it has as much to do, and the more you get to know about Eli and his sons, the more you start to think it probably didn't have much to do with Eli.
No.
Eli's out to pasture and his sons are running gunshot over the whole thing. Like, it's not a good situation she's in. But she, like later we'll see in her son, is encountering God. Hmm. In a season when that's not happening very regularly, Samuel kind of comes from good stock in that sense. Hannah is present, but she is present to her emotions, to her heart. She's present to these things, but more than anything, I see through her story consistently, she's present to God.
Mm-hmm.
That there is an actual relationship there between this woman and God. Mm-hmm. It talks about her and her husband coming regularly to worship. They're dedicated, they're devout people of faith. Even the fact that inside of her distress, she's turning to come and to bring that desire to God. Right? She wasn't looking for Eli. He came and talked to her. She was already talking to God. That the conversation, Eli kind of gets to like jump into it, but it's already happening. And so there's something about presence and the fullness of life actually, being, and it has to do primarily with the presence of our Creator, with the presence of God, Emmanuel, with us.
I think even there's an interesting shift at the beginning of verse 9 where Hannah shifts into prayer out of a place of just suffering and being the sort of victimized by her her adversary. But she, you know, this verse just really has caught my attention. After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. It just the way that it's phrased, it feels like it's kind of stating something big, stating something that's shifting things. It's like, okay, they had their meal, they had their feast, and now she's stepping into something different. Mm-hmm. She's rising up, and she goes into this place of prayer,
right,
and weeping and pouring her heart out to the Lord. And it doesn't say that she's ever done that before, mm-hmm, in her years of being barren. Yeah. But this is like, okay, I'm just, yeah. So it's in the same way that when she encounters Eli, there's a shift, and she knows her prayer has been answered. She also knows it's time to pray.
A very honest, deep, not sort of like, yeah, there's a relationship with the Lord, but it's like, God, like, I'm done. Like, I'm done being the butt of the joke and the, you know, mm-hmm, you promised. And so it's just this, like, honest.
She would have faced this every single day, because obviously they're living together, and there's all these little kids running around that aren't hers. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, there's no escape from that reality and the pain of it.
And so I thought it was an interesting kind of example for us right now and tonight, because Hannah is... I want us to just think a little bit about what happens in verses 10 and 11. Because Hannah is in an incredibly difficult place. Like Sarah just said, an inescapably difficult place. And the kind of place that, when we find ourselves in places like this, can lead us to some really interesting conversation internally. Can lead us to some really interesting conclusions about God, about us, about our lives, right? Like, for Hannah to have been in that kind of position and have to begin to shut down would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can talk about what that shutting down would look like. It could have been in all kinds of ways. I think that's part of why it's so amazing to me that she's so connected with her feelings, for example. Because many of us in these really difficult seasons, especially when they're prolonged, and if you look at the story, the writer is clear to let us know this wasn't short. It was year after year. So there's a sense in which she's lived in this for a long time and has remained soft to the Lord. Mm-hmm. At the same time, is very honest and willing to say, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I am anxiety ridden, vexed by this. Yeah. Like, and it's both. I think the other thing to recognize is that, yes, part of what's happening for her is a response towards the abuse that she's receiving.
Yeah.
So that is true, but that's part of it. It's not making it better. Yeah. This is the nature of her pain, of her situation. But I think the bigger thing deep down inside of it is a desire to have children.
Oh, for sure.
So more than it is about what's coming at her, it's what's deep inside her that is causing the deepest places of anxiety and vexation. It's not just about finally shutting this woman up, right? It's about having the desire of her heart by way of children. Mm-hmm. And John and I are closely acquainted to this desire. But when you talk to people about that who have waited and longed for that and not, it's a deep place of desire. Right? So it's a great, I think it's a good example for us today. Because many of us have these kinds of things, these kinds of desires. The other thing about these kinds of desires is that there is innately connected to them a sense of promise.
Yeah.
Right? A sense in which, probably growing up as a young woman, she just thought she would have children. That she actually probably went a while before she realized, I don't think this is happening. Mm-hmm. Right? there's just a sense in which, you know, men and women coming together in that produces children. I mean, there's just an expectation. There's a promise there innately connected to the desire. And I think there's desires of our hearts, things we long for, things that we want, that, and this is what I've been trying to point to, they're actually given to us by God. They're not crazy. They're not just selfish. They're not out there pie in the sky. The reason that we long for them the way that we do is because they're actually connected to something that God intended for us, right? And so I think it's a good example for us, this one, because it's that kind of desire. But the other side of it is, too, is then sometimes those kind of innate desires, the ones that just are kind of there from our inception, are spoken to. And so through our lives, people begin to speak to those promises, prophetically or other ways. So this one specifically, right? Maybe people begin to dream with you openly about one day that desire, that longing being fulfilled. Or we've had multiple times, Janet and I, throughout our lives, where people have come to us and prophetically spoke out over us children. And your heart begins to connect with these promises around these desires, and suddenly this thing that was there from the beginning that God put in you has now taken on a new life. Now it's been voiced. And to live with a voiced desire and to have it not fulfilled, so year after year, is part of what lands us where some of us have been feeling like we are around some of our longings. Because we begin, it's painful. And some of the pain is actually connected to that. But what is incredible to me about Hannah in verses 10 and 11 is that from this incredible place of pain and brokenness and turmoil, she voices the desire again in prayer. And I feel like that's part of what God's wanting to do right now in our hearts, is waking us back up to be able to say out loud again, God, would you do it again? God, I desire this. And for many of us in different places, especially of the deepest desires of our hearts, there's actually some work that God needs to do in our hearts to free us back up to that place again, where we could begin to say, you know, God, I have some desires around community. When in the past, those desires were vocalized for you know, either in word or just in deed, and I kind of leaned into, like I've got a really difficult friendship situation right now with a really, like, long-time friend who I feel like I'm losing right now. Mm. It can start to create in you this sense of hesitancy that in the place of friendship later. But even, like, with that hesitancy, the downside to that is that what I can't do is destroy or erase the desire for friendship in me. Yeah. It's big in all of us. It's really big in me. But there's hesitancy there. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really seen if I was to step out and to begin to ask God for something in that space. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something powerful that God would be kind of inviting us into in this season around the voicing of our desires. That we would actually begin to connect with them again in prayer. And that my hope is that the Lord would teach us how to do this. Would teach us how to do this in a really authentic and real way, but in a really Spirit-led way. Because I think that's what we're seeing here with Hannah. You know, it's not just sort of like a laundry list. Hannah's in prayer, in the presence of God, connecting with God. And so there's this sense in which, you know, her lips are moving. She can't even get the words out. That's how deep this is. But she is, in a sense, voicing the desires of her heart in the presence and under, even I would go as far as to say, the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. that all along that desire that was deep inside Hannah was for Samuel. It wasn't even just for a baby.
Yeah.
Right? So God, you know, you read this story retrospectively and you begin to go, wow, God was really preparing Hannah for this. It was painful preparation. But in it, Lord was working the whole time. Mm. Working into the heart of a woman with this desire for children, the shape or the stature of a heart that could release that gift to the Lord.
Yeah.
And when you read Samuel's life, it's like, whew, thank goodness. Samuel plays an incredible piece in this story of Israel, in God's story. And so there's this thing I think that gets kind of like, I don't know, it's like Hannah can't let go of the desire, which I think is interesting to me. I think sometimes we want to do that, but Hannah's a great reminder to us that you really can't. You know, it just kind of keeps stirring up every once in a while. It's like, down, you know? It's like, no, this is a God thing. And I think especially when we come into the presence of God, and so that's where this kind of tonight it kind of hits us in our present moment in today, when we actually become present in our moment in today, begin to, like Hannah, connect with our emotions, connect with our feelings, connect with our hearts, connect with our stories, and honestly stand in them in the presence of God, our desires come up. That in the presence of God, the Lord begins to awaken things. When He reminds us of promises, He tweaks things of desire in us. Passions, giftings, longings, like dreams. They begin, it's in those present places, and we find ourselves starting to get both excited and freaked right out, right? Like sort of like, ah! And so it's in that moment, though, that I think the call of God to us tonight, and I just want to bless you in this, and then we're going to spend a little bit of time in prayer, is to become more and more the kinds of people that really engage in the moment, and who, even when we connect with God and these things start to happen, remaining present in the moment. Continue to press into the heart of God, no matter what that looks like. For Hannah, that looked like mess. It looked so kind of crazy and intense that priests are calling her drunk. Right? There's sort of like this abandon in her heart in the presence of God that allows her to remain present even when it is a little messy. Even when the honesty gets a little bit like, I don't know where this is going. You know? So the questions to consider in prayer tonight, but certainly just throughout this season, what is the desire of your heart? We get really kind of in the present sometimes, overwhelmed and distracted and fixated on what we don't want or on the mess, right? Ignatius of Loyola, though, he talked about the fact that God is always present and always working in every moment. He's always up to something. And the question, I think, for me, more and more I want to train my heart is, what's He up to right now? Because often in the midst of these things, and especially when we begin to connect with the call of God in our life or with desires or these kinds of things, is we get overwhelmed by past and future, and we can miss what God's doing right now. Because in the waiting and not receiving yet, we can get overwhelmed by that. Well, you know, I'm waiting for the promise. That's what I'm doing right now. Wait, it's not happened. It's not happened. It's not happened. It's like, but what is happening right now? What is God doing right now? For Hannah, I think it seems very obvious to me that God was at work in all of those seasons. There was connection and presence and grace being given to Hannah. He was caring for her heart, comforting her heart. And when you, if you want later to go and to spend some time reading chapter 2, it starts with Hannah's prayer after all of this happens. And you hear some of this, that she can see how God had been present in her story, caring for her and meeting her and shaping her. And so another question maybe is this, as you sit in these places and as you begin to connect again with places of desire and longing, what is the grace? And it's a question for God, not so much for ourselves, but of God. What is the grace that you're speaking today? What is the grace, or what is the truth that you are revealing in the present moment? To begin to train our hearts to not be quite so torn away or pulled away from the present and what God would be wanting to do, address, say. I wonder if sometimes that's why we get so disconnected with our hearts, so kind of lost as far as, like, someone says to you, how are you feeling? And you go blank. Especially if it's connected to some of these places of desire or longing, and you kind of go, I don't know how to answer that question. And I wonder if that's part of it, is that we're just not present with Jesus in these spaces. It doesn't seem like Hannah would have had a hard time with that question. It might have been a bit of a intense answer every once in a while, but what is the desire of your heart? And what is the grace that God is speaking, truth that God is revealing right now in the present, right in the midst of your moment, of your situation, of your season? What does it mean to be present? What does it mean to be, like, actually engaged or present in this moment, in this journey? And what parts of what that looks like do you need some help with? Do you need to ask God to help you with? Do you feel numb? Do you feel like your heart is disengaged? Do you feel like maybe there's just too much pain connected to that for you to go there? Do you feel like you don't really know how to hear God? Or like you would have an impossible time sharing or communicating the desire of your heart? All of these different things that it would look like, or that would be needed in a sense to be present with God in a moment, what are they? And maybe think on that a little bit, and then bring to God the ones that stand out to you as hard or near impossible. Because I think at the end of the day, what I want us to think about mainly is, am I present to God? I think it shapes, and one of the reasons why Hannah's story is what it is because she was present to God. In really real and honest ways, she allowed herself to be present to God and for Him to be present to her and to spend time there. And so I just want to bless us to kind of lean into some of those things together. But we've got about 15 minutes till 9. Why don't we take 10 minutes and just get together with one other person? And we'll spend a little bit of time praying together. But I would encourage you to, in that space, share a little bit of your heart. Bless each other to be present, that God would really bring us into the present moment and what it is that God is wanting to do in this season in our lives. And maybe you want to share with the other person what would make that hard. What would make you say, I don't really know if I'm in for that. This is why. And even if you feel like tonight there's something stirring in your heart around desire, I think what one of the takeaways too is that there's something powerful about voicing those desires in prayer. And so you might not be up for that or able to do that yet, but if you are, on some level, I think it would be worth doing to just share that with another person and then just be